a stream of lights.
Have you listened to enough episodes to know the intro?
I think so.
Give it your best shot.
I think so. Welcome to Theology Thursday.
That part shouldn't be hard. It's just the title.
A podcast where we discuss theology, topics of theology.
This is great.
And
this is great.
There's a long pause somewhere. I don't know where it is.
An ecumenical space
for students to discuss
matters
of life,
faith,
and theology.
Oh, there you go. You nailed it.
Aren't faith and theology? I mean, they're pretty closely related.
Sure. Sure. We're thinking of faith, and I think, you know, we could have said matters of Christian living in theology, but that's two words, and it's even longer. And
it's true. So
we're kind of thinking about faith isn't like applied,
and
theology isn't, you know.
I see.
The studious side of things.
Very good.
So, welcome.
Hey.
Yeah. I'm your host, Connor Grubbs.
Oh.
This
Hi, Connor.
Is our guest, Blake Farrell.
I'm here.
Yeah.
So.
And Ryan and Johnny are not.
In spirit.
So the whole point of us having guests on was so that this chair wouldn't be empty because Ryan's out of town for like a month.
Yeah, there it's empty.
And it's empty because Johnny's running very late.
But he heard I was coming, I guess.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll join us later. So
I don't blame him if he doesn't.
I don't either. So you're my pastor.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And my boss, I guess. So
I guess. Yeah. Sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, so Blake is the pastor, if you don't know, at Restoration Church in Clearwater.
It's over there, right?
Yeah, okay. It's
hi, Peloton people. Patreon people.
Well, anybody.
Don't they get the video?
Well, they get it,
oh,
too.
YouTube video, too?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
It's available to everybody. So, Blake, you're the pastor at Restoration Church, Clearwater, Florida.
It's true.
And I've been leading worship there coming up on a year now, I guess, in December.
Yeah.
That's a few months away.
Time flies.
Yeah. Feels like it's been like 8 years.
Time flies during a pandemic.
Goodness.
I mean, isn't that what they say?
Maybe. I don't know. So, yeah. We can maybe talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. And, yeah, so you've been doing that for how long? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm Blake Farrell. I pastor a church. I run a coffee shop. I work as an accountant. I also have four children. And in my spare time...
Apparently you come on really crappy podcasts.
I come to Theology on Thursday. And so, yeah, I've been doing that for a while. My wife and I moved down here about 10 years ago now. Started Restoration Church in downtown Clearwater. During the course of that, needed space to meet in downtown. And as a result, did the natural thing that anyone would do when they need space, start a coffee shop.
Boom.
And so we started a coffee shop so we could have space. And now the coffee shop's really busy and doing a great job. And we have space.
Yeah.
And so that's good. And that was quirky enough that it apparently convinced Connor to come be a part of it. So,
yeah.
You know, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been cool.
Yeah.
It's been cool. And I've shared a little bit at times about it. I think, you know, one of the things that's pretty unique about it is kind of the family integrated aspect of it. If you want to speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So Country Church is sort of normal operation of church. In our church, we just have the kids hang out with us as much as possible. And so what that means is we don't have any child programming other than kids 6 and under during the sermon can go back and have like a short Bible study time and prayer and mostly play time in sort of a nursery setting. But otherwise, kids older than 6 just stay in service with us the whole time. They participate in worship, as do the younger kids. But they also listen to the sermon, you know, kind of hang out with each other, are relatively calm and like, you know, draw or whatever, like you might remember doing in a pew growing up if you were in some, you know, church that didn't have, you know, mega programming. And And then they do their, they actually facilitate their own prayer time, which has been really cool to see, because we used to feel like we needed the responsibility of an adult going over there and like helping them walk through the time of prayer and how we pray for a church and how we pray for a country and that kind of thing. But lately, they're like stiff arming the parents from coming and helping facilitate that time, because they've got it. They understand. They're like, okay, awesome. I want to pray for my friends and I want to pray for that church and that country, and I get it. So
yeah,
they're kind of running it for the most part on their own, which is really pretty cool.
Yeah.
One of the really key things that we really wanted to see. The other thing that we'd love to see is that like our kids are just belting out these songs.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, Connor brings a great song and they just want to sing along with it and do a great job, and to hear their voices, you know, amongst all the adults is beautiful.
Yeah,
so.
It really is. No, that was something that stuck out to me the first time I visited, because I wasn't leading that Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, the kids were right behind me. And I just, like, I was like, you can hear them more so than anybody else in the room.
Yep.
And it was just really cool.
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. So they just learn way more, way quicker than you ever think. And so it's just really cool to see them, you know, in that. And I just really believe in challenging them at an earlier age than our culture challenges them with spiritual things. They're being challenged with all sorts of other stuff already.
Yeah.
So we might as well be pressing into them on faith earlier as well, because, man, you need the tools to battle at an early age. And so we want them to be as involved in discussions as possible. Challenge with that, obviously, is like if you had programming for kids, then, you know, you've got an easier space for them to fit in. And we're trying to figure out ourselves as we go along.
What does it mean
to be family integrated, and how do we compensate for the fact that we don't have a, you know, youth group dodgeball night every week or whatever? Because there is some things lost in that. So
we're
learning as we go. And I think we're figuring some things out.
We're learning together.
Mm. Yes. We're doing a lot of things together.
So, but one of the things that I think is really cool about, not just the family, but just the model as a whole, that's really unique, is that it's much more relationship driven than it is program driven.
To speak to that, like it's not generational focus. So we like intergenerational learning.
Yeah,
so there's no, even in our small groups, they're set up such that we actually desire, you know, seniors and young adults and young marrieds and marrieds with kids and kids to be in the same space.
Yeah.
Recognizing that we don't naturally hang out with each other. Like, I'm not gonna like call up, you know, a senior necessarily and be like, hey, let's go, you know, get some food or whatever. Like, that's, I'm probably not gonna do that, but I might call my friend John and be like, hey, let's go meet up. But he's in my life stage. I'm gonna interact with him more normally. But I need to hear like from people in different life stages of their faith, like how they're reading a passage and how they're hearing this message and hear their perspective, because frankly, I'm not there. So I want to hear how, you know, how Jesus's challenges to them are playing out in their lives, because I'm not in their space. And so I want to understand how, you know, the gospel applies not just to my case, but to everybody. And the beautiful thing is it applies in a very similar manner, just with different perspectives. So,
Well,
that's cool.
And not to belabor the point, because that's not why we're here today. I just thought it'd be cool to share more about it,
because
it is different. And I think like no matter what, tradition of the faith you're from and what model of church you implement, like the main thing that I hope you can take away from it is be intentional about that cross-generational interaction.
Absolutely.
Find a way to do that might look way different in your context than it does in ours.
Absolutely.
But you need to pursue that, because it's really important.
Absolutely.
So with that being said, you know, you offered a critique.
I did.
About the podcast that subpoints should come at the end instead of the beginning.
I did.
Okay. And I want the audience to gauge in on this. Let me know.
Do you agree
with me? In the comments. Do you think that subpoints should come at the beginning or at the end? It's sort of an icebreaker. Like, let's just hang out and talk about something stupid. Sometimes it's not stupid. Sometimes it's kind of intense. But, you know, whatever. You know?
Yeah.
Why do you think it should be at the end?
Yeah, so, okay, I'll make my case, right?
Okay.
So my case is, Theology Thursday. I see that on my podcast list. I see a topic, and I'm like, oh, you know, I want to learn about hell. Yeah, we're talking about hell this week? Sweet. I'm going to pull out that podcast and listen to what Connor and his buddies think about hell.
Yeah.
And so if I pull up the podcast, I'm ready to, you know, hear about how hell matters so much.
And then you're hearing about,
you know,
Trump
I'm
and
like,
aliens.
Okay, when do we start talking about hell? Because
sure.
I wanted to hear about that.
Yeah.
And I'm like 15 minutes in and I'm working through a subpoint, which is, granted, very entertaining and very worth the time. But I'm like,
I see your
when
point.
When is hell coming?
Yeah.
You know.
So. Well, you know, another solution to that I've always wanted to do but just never taken the time to do is just put in the show notes timestamps. So
oh, yeah.
You could skip.
That's true. That's true.
It might be that simple.
Maybe it is that simple.
And for the YouTube audience, this is a non-issue because...
They just get what they get.
It's separated into multiple videos throughout the week. So
there you go.
Yeah.
They can do what they want there.
There's a
perfect
video
them.
And then yeah.
Yeah.
But the audio is all together. So,
yes.
But we're going to do the subpoint now.
I'm good with it.
Okay.
I'm good with it.
And this is great because we actually have, if you weren't aware, we have a monthly podcast that's exclusive to our tier 2 and 3 Patreons.
Ooh.
Okay. Called Theology Thursday Reading Hour, where
nice.
We discuss books that we've been reading. So
nice.
We do that once a month.
Nice.
So this fits right in with some discussions we have. We used to talk about books a lot in subpoints, and we realized, you know, we should make like videos about this. And then we realized, I don't know, like how much of a market there is on YouTube for that. But if people are giving to us, that's like they're probably interested in you know what we're reading. So it seemed like a kind of a niche thing for that. So today you have a book that you want to share about.
I do. My subpoint is about a book. So if that makes it premium content, I don't know. But
it's
anyway.
Not.
Okay, good.
Because you're
this
talking
is
about
for
the
masses.
Book. I'm just going to know.
Exactly. And it,
no,
it
share.
Very wordless.
I'm.
Yeah, so many of you know a pastor named Kerry Newhoff. Maybe you know him. He's a pastor in Toronto. I think it's Connexus Church was the church he pastored. Became wildly successful church model and grew fabulous, you know, whatever. And then he pivoted at some point to leadership and and thought, you know, being a thought leader, I guess, and writing books and all this. And he, in his sort of life, he came to a point in his late 30s, which I am. And so it's uniquely important to me in some ways. He came to a point in his life where he reached burnout.
Yeah.
They're having tremendous success, doing amazing things, growing like crazy. Achieving everything he really wanted to achieve.
Yeah.
Except that he had spent so many years trying to achieve what he needed to achieve that he'd burned out.
Right.
And just like, you know, had a rough go of it for a long period of time, emotionally, spiritually, et cetera. So he shares about that, and that birthed this book for him, being that there is a need for managing our time well so that we can meet the expectations that we put on ourselves and take care of what matters, you know, to us. And so he came up with this book called At Your Best. And so I've been reading through that and or listening to an Audible or whatever. And it's been really good, just very encouraging. And the basic like framework or one of the big thoughts that he has is that, you know, we think of a work day in terms of like 8, maybe 10 hours if we're, you know, one of these you or I, we're probably 10, 12, whatever it is. We're working on work and school and church, all these things. And how do we prioritize our time? Well, he actually says that we only have somewhere like the average person between 3 and 5 hours of time that is like our peak performance time. Like I can get into a project, I can get it done and have some tremendous thought and advance something. Maybe it's a book you're writing or maybe it's a material you're developing or talk you're working on or whatever it is. And that you only have like 3 to 5 hours of time a day that can truly be like beneficial to accomplishing one of those big goals that you might have. And so, you know, if you think you've got 10 hours to work in a day, the truth is like your capacity is really more like 3. And if you're an amazing person, then maybe 5. But that really kind of drills it down for you and drives home the need for, well, if I've only got 3 hours of my day at some point where I'm at my peak performance and actually going to advance a project that I think needs to be advanced, well, I need to structure my day such that I know that my 3 hours spent on that is at the right time.
Yeah.
So that's where you get to this conversation of, is my best time at night? Is my best time in morning? Is my best time in afternoon? Whatever it is. And where are the 3 hours of my day that I can put my most important projects that are most important to me that I want to advance, where can I put those so that I maximize them? And everything else falls into a yellow or a red category of, okay, maybe I have less energy, but I can accomplish a meeting because, you know, the person that I have become is just kind of there, right? So, like, this is a yellow time for me, so to speak, I guess is what I'm understanding. I'm learning the thing. But, you know, I know who I am, so I'm confident coming to talk to you. I actually didn't prepare anything. Sorry.
Yeah. We're just.
But I just.
That's the Theology Thursday way.
Right. I am who I am. Right. And so I don't have to put a whole bunch of brain power into this time period of the day because I'm just hanging out with Connor.
Yeah.
And talking about something that matters to me. So yeah. I don't have to like think very hard about that. I just have to be who God has made me to be at this point. So. So if you're scheduling something like that, it should fall into your yellow zone. And if you're in your red zone, you should do something like you don't want to do, like run. You know, exercise is a good thing to put in your red zone because, first of all, you're not going to accomplish anything anyways during your red zone time of the day. So you might as well be doing something that's productive that doesn't require any thought and just run or exercise or, you know, plow through email or whatever it is that doesn't take a lot of thinking. So
does he offer some sort of framework to figure out what those times are?
Yeah, he does. I think it's atyourbest.com. He's actually got a website with some tools set up for it. And he talks through kind of the challenges, right, of how you should best use your red zones and your yellow zones and your green zones and where they typically fall for people and how you should like think about each category. So he does a really good job of like walking through it and dealing with people's potential objections. So
yeah.
If you've read anything about Carrie, you know he's very thorough with all that he's doing. And so, you know, one of the things that he wraps up with is just that, you know, he's in his 50s now, has two older children, I think two, maybe more. But he's got regrets, right? Because he spent a good chunk of his productive years just going as hard as possible. And it drove him to burnout at a time when he should have been the best for his kids, you know? And so he recognized his regret in life is that, yeah, like I wasted some years on my family because I didn't manage my time well. I was doing great things, but I just didn't manage my time well. And it ran me into the ground. And so like if I would have had a better framework for when I accomplish what is most important, I think I would have done a better job. And this is kind of the culmination of my thoughts on this is this. I was talking to my father-in-law about this a while back. They're coming in tonight, actually, and we were driving from wherever it was, Virginia to Louisville, I think, dropping off a trailer or whatever. Anyway, some side story. We were in the car, and we were reflecting on kind of just, it just so happens a lot of times that the point at which you are most professionally confident happens at the time when you're most socially needed, just generally in life, like in the general framework of life. In your 30s, you know, when it's about the time that you're having kids and have your career kind of sorted out or whatever, understand, like it's the time when you've got probably built the most relationships have built up, you're the most you know, motivated to, you know, accomplish things, and it all kind of just crunches into this one time frame of your life, right? Because like 20 years from now, for me, right, I'm going to be 50 or so, right? I'm going to be almost 50. No, well, 20 years from now, no, I'll be almost 60, right?
Yeah.
So like my life is going to be totally different, right? Like it's going to be a lot slower, you know? But right now, there are so many demands. And that's not just unique to me. That's like pretty a normal occurrence that in life you just like you've gotten into this stride of your career, and it turns out that happens to be when you might be raising a family and you might be most connected to other people. And so it just is a really needed space of how do I manage my time through this kind of a season? Because we're all going to face it. You know, how do I do it well? I don't want to be at 50 or 60 and look back with regrets about how I cared for and spent time with my children. So.
Well, you'll certainly look back and regret that you wasted any time being on this podcast. So obviously your time management book did not help because you're here.
God. Hey, I just finished it, so I haven't quite applied it. Maybe 6 months, there's no chance I'm showing
sorry,
up.
Sorry, I just read a Carrie Newhoff book. I can't come today.
I can't come today. Exactly.
It's not worth my time.
The Art of Saying No. Very important.
Yeah.
But I love Connor.
That's a different book.
For you, so I'm
well,
here.
Aw, that's aw. Sweet. Well, you are here. And the topic that we're going to talk
not,
about.
Though.
The topic that we're going to talk about today, you've never met Johnny in person,
no,
have you? Well, maybe at my wedding.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I'm
reception
at your wedding.
Thing. COVID's weird.
Oh, man. Yeah, didn't get invited to your wedding, but got invited to your wedding reception. So that's how much has changed in a year.
I mean,
nobody was invited to your wedding, but.
Yeah. I also.
Did we know you?
I don't
even
know
you.
I knew you when I got married.
Yeah, a lot can change in a year.
Yeah. Well,
Johnny, save us. Where are you, man?
Johnny. hey, so we're going to talk about something that I thought would be interesting to that you're not prepared to talk about. I thought it'd be interesting to discuss though, because we've had some discussions about it,
yeah,
on the podcast. So obviously, you know, because you know, recognizing that you're not like super prepared, right?
Yeah,
we're gonna. No, you're good.
Am I good?
OCD. That you that okay. So recognizing that this is just a casual conversation.
Yes.
We're not looking for some super deep, like theological, like philosophical, hermeneutical framework for preaching out of
good.
The Old Testament.
Good.
Okay.
Because yeah,
this is going to be a less academic episode. We're really looking just what are some of the challenges,
yes,
as well as the joys and things that you've been learning in this season of preaching through the Old Testament.
Yes.
Okay. Because we've talked several times recently about like just dealing with certain Old Testament passages that are super difficult, and
yeah,
like some people's approach is just forget the Old Testament altogether. Like, I guess there's a couple things in there that are nice, but most of it doesn't matter anymore because Jesus came. And
yeah,
then there are other people who are like, well, hold on a second. Like, there's a lot here. Like, Jesus really liked the Old Testament, so I probably should too.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, I think, in the Gospels, in the New Testament, in the story of Jesus, that like you need the Old Testament to fully grasp and understand, right? So, but I think there's definitely like, yes, it's important. We need to be studying it. We need to be preaching from it and learning from it as church communities.
Yeah, all scriptures got breathed, right?
Yeah.
That was mostly Old Testament for them when they heard that.
Yeah. So. And there's a lot of Old Testament stuff that's like just really hard to navigate.
Yeah.
And, you know, most people lean really heavy preaching out of the epistles and the Gospels.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's a lot clearer.
Yeah.
What it's absolutely trying to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are some things you've learned as you've been preaching through the Old Testament verse by verse?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You started in Genesis, right? When you planted the church.
Yeah. No.
When
we
did you start
in
Genesis?
Luke. We started in Luke.
You started in Luke.
Yeah, we haven't been in the Old Testament for 10 years.
Okay, that's
good.
Yeah,
okay, there you go.
That's good.
Okay, yeah, but we probably could have. I mean, honestly, you probably could have.
Honestly,
yeah,
that's why it wouldn't have surprised me if that had been the case.
Yeah. So my approach has always been trying to think through like the bigger narrative as I go through. So when we started, actually, just to rewind, like I started in Luke.
Yeah.
And so with the gospel and with, you know, when we started our church, and then we jumped through Acts. And as we went through Acts, as we came to like a city that Paul had written a letter to, he jumped off and did that letter from the context of Acts.
Yeah.
You know, and so like, you know, I value the timeline that we're walking through rather than just the book order, which is kind of a different slant at it, you know, so to speak. So the same thing with the Old Testament, like, okay, I'm just going to go to the beginning and start with Genesis.
And I know you've taken little breaks along the way to like, oh, we're going to do an epistle here for a little bit in between just to kind of
take people a need a break. People need a break sometimes.
But when
you
did you start Genesis?
Genesis, I don't know, like two years ago?
Okay.
I mean, we had to have been in it for like 2 years.
And you're in Deuteronomy now.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe three. I'm not sure. We'll have to check our website.
It's been,
see when
been
we
a few
Genesis.
Years.
It's been
right?
a minute. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're working through a framework called CASKET, actually. It's one of my professors from seminary developed this framework called CASKET, and it's creation, Abraham, Sinai, kings, exile, temple. So CASKET, right?
Okay.
And the New Testament counterpart to that is empty, right? The CASKET is empty. Jesus rose from the grave. See, the whole story is there. CASKET, empty. But the Old Testament is CASKET. So we started with creation. And we've gotten through creation, Abraham, and now we're technically still in Sinai before transitioning to kings once the conquest happens. So right now we're in Deuteronomy, working through sort of the Sinai period, which is everything from Exodus to the wandering in the desert and up until they enter the land. So,
right. There's some narrative in that, but also a lot of law.
A lot of law.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leviticus and Deuteronomy. Lots of law.
Yeah. Those are the two most law-heavy portions of the whole Bible.
Yeah. Like I learned, I don't know why I didn't pick this up in seminary. I didn't pick this up when I went through, but Deuteronomy like literally means second law.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Law 1, law 2. You know, right. Just retell it. So
yeah, no, and a lot of it is repeats.
Yeah,
right,
really
from Leviticus. So what have been some of the challenges of, like, we're gonna get together on Sunday morning and we're gonna preach, like, you literally have sections that in certain translations are categorized miscellaneous laws, right? And yes, it's just a bunch of random stuff. Like, what do you do with that?
Yeah, so you know, you just take what's there, right? I mean, so for the past few weeks, we've been in this, like you said, this miscellaneous law section. And so, you know, even prior to this, I've had to adjust my approach for this past few weeks, like we talked about the other day during staff meeting. You know, I try as much as possible to take what's there. But once we got into miscellaneous laws, it's like, okay, we've literally just got, like, an explanation of all sorts of different laws here that, like, how do these fit in the bigger context? And thankfully, like, reading good commentary to help me frame up, like, how to walk through Deuteronomy. And one of the key things that has helped me kind of parse out Deuteronomy is, oh, yeah, there's this, like, general section describing how and why and what the moral law is, that is the Ten Commandments, and why you should listen to it. Remember, like, God saved you, and he's going to be with you. So maybe you should listen to him because you know how he opened the sea for you?
Yeah, right.
He's kind of a big deal. You should pay attention to what he says. Yeah. He kind of created the world. So, you know, listen to these things. And now in chapters 12 and through 26, which is where we're at, he is just explicitly describing the way in which that Ten Commandments is going to, you know, work out for them when they enter the land, the things they're going to come across. So it can be very obscure sounding, right?
Yeah.
Like we talked about this Sunday, hey, you shouldn't charge interest to your brother if you give him a loan.
Right.
Like, if you read that during your morning devotion, you're like, what the heck am I reading? Like,
you know, he's dealing with some very specific scenarios, right? Like in
exactly.
some of the laws. It's like,
yeah, exactly. Why are we talking about loan interest?
Yeah.
You know, I thought banks were bad. You know, why are we talking about loan interest anyways?
Yeah.
So we get to
deal
with...
We had several bankers there on Sunday morning,
too. We had several bankers that I rebuked heavily for their heavy-handed lending. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kip. Anyway, so, you know, you take that and you say, okay, why? Why did God give this law? He didn't give it with no purpose, because we know a rubric, right, that the scripture is God-breathed and useful for teaching. So if this is scripture, we believe this is scripture, then for some reason this law about interest is actually important and we should consider it. And really what it gets it down to is that, you just as Jesus summed it up, right? We're to love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind and strength, and love our neighbor as we love ourselves. That's his description of the law. That's his summary Cliff Notes version, is two things: love God, love people, period.
Yeah.
That's sum up the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And so how does interest advice or interest commands relate to that? Well, actually, if you view your brother in Israel as family, as you should, then are you going to charge him interest? No, that'd be ridiculous. You don't charge your brother interest. If your brother needs something, you give your brother something and say, hey, man, like, I'd love that back, but, you know, you can have it until you're done with it, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't charge him interest on that. You don't charge him interest on his food you give him or whatever. You loan it to him and say, I love you, brother. You know?
Yeah.
Here, I've got it. God gave it to me.
Right.
So if you recognize as a people of Israel that God gave me all these things, then I freely give them to you, because I didn't earn them on my own. I mean, God's the one that knocked down Jericho's walls. You know what I mean? So, like, he gave us what we have.
Right.
So God is telling them, hey, recognize where this came from. It came from me. And recognize that you're family. And you shouldn't be charging interest to one another because you're family. So, I mean, could you imagine, like, writing up an interest document to pay a loan back to your dad? You
right,
know?
Right.
Like, funny enough, I actually did that with my parents. I can't remember when I was talking about this, that Bible study or not, but, like, I should have shared this on Sunday, but at some point I needed a loan. I needed some money, and I asked my parents, hey, could I have a loan? And I went to the detail of, like, I'll pay it back with interest, you know, and I put together a payment schedule or whatever, and we agreed on it or whatever. And I'm sure they were just laughing at me, honestly, looking back at it. I'm sure they're thinking, this is so silly. Like, do I really care about $70 on a $1,000, you know, between my son? But, you know, maybe he's learning a good lesson. So fine. We'll take the interest. Fine.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was a teaching thing for them, but, you know, like, you don't need to charge me interest on that. That's silly. Right. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, But yeah, so that's kind of.
So I think that example
gets to love, right?
Yeah. So what I'm kind of hearing is like a good approach to the laws, particularly some of like the more like oddly specific and kind of vague kind of scenario things is when we approach those things, the question we should be asking is what's the general principle here, right?
Yes.
Like this, I may never find myself in this specific situation.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But what's the general principle
right.
that God was trying to teach to the Israelites
right.
and ultimately to me?
Yes.
What's the character and like life principles that I should glean from this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what we've been trying to do as much as possible is find that. And there's other areas that are stickier, right,
yeah.
in the Old Testament. And those are areas of like, what does it mean that Israel has a land? And, you know, for instance, we're talking about murder outside the city gates, you know,
nice.
And the, right. That was one of the topics
right.
a couple weeks ago was someone is murdered outside the city gates. You don't know who done it. And still God wants you to atone for the land itself.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a certain process in which you're to atone for the land. You're supposed to kill a heifer that hadn't been used. It's really a great heifer. And you're not supposed to spill any blood when you do it because you can't do it at the temple. Like, there's all these rules. They're like, this is really weird. Why are we doing this? Right?
Yeah.
Well, turns out God gave them the land as a place for his presence to dwell specifically. And so it should be holy. Now, that doesn't translate very one-to-one into our situation
sure.
that we find ourselves in 2021. If you tried to apply it one-to-one to your situation here in 2021, you'd find yourself saying, well, we have to purify the land of America
right.
by sacrificing a heifer, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, Israel and America.
And then you'll go to jail for animal abuse.
And then you'll go to, there'll be a number of issues
yeah.
that you'll come upon, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, you can't equate Israel to your current country that you live in.
Right.
Because now there's Christians in all sorts of countries. So America isn't Israel.
Yeah.
Right. In fact, I mean, there's more Christians in other countries. So maybe they're Israel if you're going to go with that. You know, like, how do you apply a national perspective of
right.
the Old Testament to a now global perspective of the Christian kingdom of God? Right.
So right.
And
we see that, I mean, in conversations between Peter and Paul and some of the tensions that they dealt
yes.
with in the early church, that sort of nationalistic perspective on
yeah.
God's people was just totally shattered.
Yeah.
Of like,
yeah,
Christ died for all, right?
Right.
Like, it's
yeah.
a totally different
Jesus slowly was
right?
breaking it down during his ministry, like talking to the Samaritan woman and talking,
yeah.
like he was making the breaks to it, but then, you know, as soon as Jesus calls Paul to ministry, it's like,
yeah.
oh, I'm to go to the Gentiles.
Yeah. Yeah.
What? I hate them.
Right.
Okay, but I mean, if you'd knock me blind and, you know, and speak to me in a vision, then I guess,
yeah.
you know, probably I should obey you.
Right.
So,
well, yeah. I also think, you know, one of the things that when seeing, like, just the detail
yeah.
and the complexity of all of these laws about, you know, holiness and sacrifices
yeah.
and all that stuff surrounding atonement is in me, that brings out just a gratefulness
yes.
for the sacrifice of Christ.
Right.
right? Because
right.
he fulfilled that.
Yeah.
All of that.
Yes.
You know, that's part of what he's saying when he says, I've come to fulfill the law
yes.
is that he is the ultimate atonement.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we don't have to worry about those things.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, and a lot of people ask the question of the Old Testament, like, why so many sacrifices? Why are we killing so many animals? You know, like, what is looking at it as if there's this perspective that look at that as if God just didn't value animals, right?
Right.
I mean, there is literally like a perspective
yeah.
that why would God kill so many animals, right?
Yeah.
And we think about it in our kind of domesticated animal perspective, like, oh, the poor cow, it died,
yeah.
you know?
Like,
yeah. we like cows, eat more chicken, you know?
Yeah.
Right? And we
yeah.
come with that domesticated view of animals. And, you know, it turns out, like, it's a tremendous sacrifice to the people
right,
to give up
resource.
A tenth of their
yeah.
resources
yeah.
to sacrifice. That picture itself is meant to evoke loss, right? It is
right.
meant to demonstrate to the people where their strength and provision comes from, not from what they have grown or not what from they have stewarded, but rather from what God has given. And God knows the cost.
Right.
Didn't, you know, his intention wasn't to just slaughter a bunch of animals, but once it became necessity, he said, okay, this is the cost of brokenness, you know, is sacrifice.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, you look back at it and think, oh, so much bloodshed of animals. And and it wasn't cheap.
Yeah.
You know, it was a tenth of the income, practically speaking,
right,
of everybody in the nation. And you're just killing it.
Yeah. Well, and
I'm
drawing a connection where Jesus, you know, calls out the rich man to just leave everything he has, right?
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't really a new call. I mean, you know, those loans and interest we were talking about is going to translate to, like, you know, cows and heifers, not dollars like we're thinking
exactly.
of it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So there is this sort of, like, there's a different weight to it.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think one of the other, like, probably biggest challenges for people, and it's something that you hear, you know, people outside of the Christian community bring up a lot as, like, this is why I don't want anything to do with your God.
Yeah.
As there's a lot of things that at face value, especially in the Old Testament, seem like they're condoning all types of
slavery,
you know,
and
genocide and slavery
and
all sorts of things that, like, at face value, you're like, oh, he's just telling them to go in and, you know, kill everybody and take slaves and do all this stuff.
Right.
Like, that's heavy. What do we do with that? Like, knowing, and I know that's a big question, right?
Yep.
But, like, what, because we've already, like, come up on some of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And, there's a lot there. Mm-hmm. So what?
Yeah. Yeah,
how do we
it's
wrestle
interesting.
With that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we'll take the topic of slavery, for instance, right? Slavery is discussed. Like, God gives instructions about slaves, right?
Yeah.
And again, we have this, and I'm not downplaying any sort of picture of slavery. Slavery is not good. No one wants to become a slave or be a slave, but it's a reality. And so, like, in our current understanding of slavery, we had indentured slavery in America, which is horrible and atrocious, and we should repent for. And do as much as we can to, like, bring some restitution to that or whatever. But this slavery is a different kind of a scenario that God is addressing a lot of times in the Old Testament. For instance, one of the laws in the Old Testament, I don't think we covered it. I think it was from this past section, but I don't think we covered it too much, was that if a slave runs from his master to you, then you are to, so say you're a person of Israel, and another man in Israel has a slave, right? And the fact is, in Israel, let's back up a little bit, you could become a slave, right? Because of natural existing occurrences in life, right? Mm. So something happens to your crop. You don't have money.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do to provide for your family? Well, you're going to go to your brother, and you're going to say, hey, I need to work for you because my field is flooded, or my whatever. Like, something happened to me so drastic and terrible, which is going to happen in a fallen world, like hurricanes and tornadoes and natural disasters. They're going to happen. So when that happens to your property, you don't have any options. So that year, you're stuck. You don't have a field to do any crops in. You go to your brother and say, I enslave myself to you. I literally don't have any other options. I have to work to provide for my family. Can I work for you? And he would take you on as a slave.
Yeah.
So first, like, you know, that's a good thing. Right?
Yeah.
That there's a job for him, effectively, to do, to provide for his family and come under the care of a master. Now, God desires all those masters, right, that come into a situation where they are stewards over people who are in their indentured or enslaved to them, to care for them as much as he cares for them, remembering that you once were slaves in Egypt.
Right.
So there's a call to remember what it was like to be enslaved in an improper way, in an abusive way.
Yeah.
And so when slavery becomes a reality in your case due to whatever effects, then you should treat them with respect and honor, not with abuse, you know, seeking to care for the needs in their difficult state.
Yeah.
Right. So first that framework, right? Like, because we look at it like, oh, someone, God likes slaves. See, he says there's laws about slaves. So slaves,
You
know, God likes slaves. It's like, no. Listen to the context.
Yeah.
He is instructing Israelites how to care for one another when they come upon hard times.
Yeah.
So here, care for this slave. Now, the law recently that I came across was in chapter 25 or 24, 25. Sorry, I don't have the reference. It says, if a slave runs from his master to you, then you should take him in and give him whatever you can in your property. Let him roam freely in your property and basically protect him.
Hmm.
Why? Because God is not okay with a master being abusive toward his slave such that that slave would want to run away.
Right, right.
So if a slave is running away from his master, God is saying, that's a bad thing. That's not what I intended. Right. That's not what I want to happen. Yeah, bad things are going to happen. You're going to become enslaved to someone, but they are not to be treating you in a abusive manner. They're to respect you as a holy child of God, you know, as your brother of the Father in heaven, right?
Right.
So you are brothers. You should be caring for you, you know. I'm not giving you my property, but I am going to let you be part of my household and serve me so that you can care for your family. And so there's just a different, like, you have to put on a different brain to interpret that kind of a statement rather than, you know, 20th century, you know, America or whatever, 21st century America, right? It's a totally different context.
And there's no question, like, we absolutely condemn slavery in all its forms,
right?
But when we're looking at some of these Old Testament passages and what they're talking about, it's almost like, you know, a different meaning to this word entirely because it's taking place in a different, you know, economic and cultural context than
it's not
we could
quite,
possibly understand.
It's not quite employment, and I know some people have sometimes tried to apply, oh, that's just like an employment scenario. No, he actually came upon such loss that he had nothing,
right?
And he needed to depend on somebody else. So he was kind of became his property, but it's not the same as we define it. You know,
He one wouldn't have the same status that they did before, of course, but at the same time, they are in repayment for their work. They and their families are taken care of,
which was necessitated.
So, I mean, some of those things are really difficult. And I think just to speak a little bit to like some of the stuff that I know I've, you know, still wrestling with trying to understand all of it. Like, I don't think any of us are claiming we have this figured
out, because
some of this stuff is like, whoa.
Yeah.
But I think with Joshua, one important thing to note in particular, because we're going to be getting into that soon, right? There's a lot of war, a lot of conquests,
so
a lot
much.
Of that stuff.
I don't know
going
what
on.
To do.
And particularly in Joshua. I think it's just important to remember, again, trying to go back to the context and the language and the culture of the time. It's just we're so separated from that. It can be hard to do, but it's important if we want to truly understand the text. Like in conquest literature, which Joshua would definitely fall into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of hyperbolic language that was used. That was just how they wrote. So we'll see in a chapter and say, go in and kill everybody.
Yes.
Even the women and the children. And then in the next chapter, it's talking about some of the women and the children that like are alive
yes,
or that they're intermarrying and stuff. So obviously they didn't do that.
Right.
There's just this sort of totalitarian, like hyperbolic language that was used.
Yes.
And I think another thing, understanding that what we know, even from other historical accounts of a lot of these cultures, is when they're taking in the women and the children from like with one of the passages we went through recently, which was like, what do you do with some of the women who are coming from these cultures? That they're actually like really abusive and violent cultures that they're coming from, where women and children were treated terribly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so actually to be taken in under the care of an Israelite family was rescue from a lot of terrible situations.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
And you know, that's not to say that answers all the questions, but when we're approaching some of those things, like take the time to really try and understand, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Really. I mean, the biggest piece of the conquest is, God is calling Israel, and this is what you have to wrestle with, right? God is calling Israel to destroy the inhabitants of the land. Yeah. I mean, that's what he's calling him to. And, you can read that and go, wow, that seems pretty harsh, right?
Yeah.
But if you know, you have to, again, remove yourself from a individualistic society of the 21st century and put yourself into a very corporate society of the ancient Near East, and say, okay, God has called out a nation to go and be a judgment piece against other nations, then, his hyperbolic language is going to be such that, destroy all of them, remove them. And why? Well, because they're so gone that there's not any hope of them coming back. Like, they're so headlong into rejecting me and rejecting morality and my intention for them as human beings, you know, they're so far gone from that, that it's best that we totally destroy it. Just like Noah in the flood, right?
Right, I mean, right, right.
He came to Noah and said, hey, build an ark, because everyone else is going to die.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
and no one repented. No one saw Noah building an ark and preaching righteousness and think, yeah, we should maybe get along with this. He seems like he might have a good idea. No, they're just totally rejecting him. Yeah. So you have to take a corporate mindset and understand the context from that. And it doesn't make it any less difficult to stomach, but it does provide you with a framework to understand, oh, like that's what sin looks like in its ultimate form. And then to apply that forward to yourself is the next challenge, right? Understand the context, know that this is God's inspired word, and so how do I understand it first? But then how do I apply that forward to me is another big jump that you have to make with every single passage.
Right?
I'm jumping from 5,000 years ago current events and applying it to my context. I've got to jump a lot of stuff.
Which,
you know,
by the way, applying it is not engaging in conquest.
Exactly. Just to be clear, we are not saying we need to start conquesting. But we should know that there's a battle, right? And that's why Paul gets to this language in Ephesians of take on the armor of God. Yeah, it is a fight. Like, if sin is in me, it's not just like I decide by new information that I'm going to remove sin from myself. It's like, no, actually, I have to do some hard work. You know, I have to do some real work of speaking truth with scripture, which is a double-edged sword. You know, that's the language and imagery. I'm going to have to go to war against the fleshly desires that are within me if I'm going to advance from them. And so if you take anything from, you know, the Old Testament conquest, apply it to your own heart, right?
Right.
Don't apply it to your nation. That's not possible. Don't do that.
No.
But apply it to your heart for sure and say, how do I root out this sin that is in me? Well, I don't just kind of passively take in information and think it's just going to soak into my desires. No, I have to pray. I have to read scripture. I have to call out to God and say, God, take these desires from me and replace them with yours.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the kind of really intention and war you have to go at yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the interesting things about going through the Old Testament has been that from the time that the Israelites leave Egypt to the time they go through the land, they're literally called to battle formation.
Yeah.
And I missed that for a long time, you know, until you get to Leviticus, and literally the first chapters of Leviticus are, hey, this is where you should camp for war. You know, they were headed to war from the beginning. They were ready for battle as soon as they left Egypt under God's command. And so, so we missed that. That's a big theme that I just totally like blew past as you're reading law. It's like, what are these laws about? Blah, 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 blah. It's like, oh, well, they're at war actually. And they're preparing for war.
Yeah.
And so how does that apply to me? Well, I guess God cares about me, you know, defeating evil within myself. And it's not just like passive information download. It's like active work on my soul, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, it's a fight.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So I think some applications and kind of summary of the discussion is like, one, if you're a leader or a pastor or a ministry, you know, leader in any context, like teach out of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
It's important.
So good. So good.
If you're anyone listening to this podcast, study the Old Testament, read the Old Testament.
Yep.
And just know going into it that I think a big overarching kind of thematic application is that God is holy.
Mm-hmm.
He takes sin seriously.
Yeah.
And so we should take holiness and sin seriously as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? He took it so seriously that he sent his son to die for us.
Yeah.
On a cross.
Yeah.
While we were yet sinners.
Right.
Right. It's like that's how serious he took sin.
Yeah.
And that literally is, like you said, the description that we find in the Old Testament is this leading to us that, yeah, this law is not sufficient. I can't fulfill it on my own. Can't do it even if I tried. Can't make up for what I did in the past.
Yeah.
You know, and so there is ultimately this necessity and need for God to step in and save me. You know, otherwise I'm left without no hope. So
without
any hope. So yeah.
That's some good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, I appreciate you joining us.
Well, I mean, it's great to be here.
I feel like that conversation was more productive than most of our staff meetings.
I mean, probably, maybe, I don't know.
Those are completely useless.
Yeah, I mean, but I like you, so we should keep meeting.
I guess so.
Agenda for today, hang out with Connor. That's pretty much all I've got on there.
Well, good. I'm just glad we were able to get through this without. There was less sarcasm than I was expecting. Good job.
Oh, thanks. Good job. Yeah. Well, I'll try to get some sarcasm in here.
Okay. Good. Good. Well, hey, we've had some new Patreons join. Thank you. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, you are.
There's going to be an after show. So check that out. We're gonna
with Johnny, right?
We're gonna give a little bit of an update on the SPC Executive Committee. We've talked about that before on the show, and there's some news. So we're gonna chat about that. It's a Patreon exclusive. And yeah, if you wanna hear some of the messages that we've been going through, I'll leave a link in the description where you can go to our podcast feed with the sermons from Restoration Church. Kind of follow along and engage in that way. And if you're in the area, if you live near Clearwater, Florida, come pay us a visit. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Great.
Are you going to say the closing? Have you ever gotten to the end of an episode?
I don't know that I've listened to the outro. I don't know.
I want to hear you say how Ryan closes it.
Bye.
Here, hold on.
Isn't that what he says? Bye.
I have to spell it out for you because if I say it, then that ruins it.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah. Exactly. So here we go. I'm ready. Ryan, I hope to do you proud, man. I've never met you, but you seem like a nice guy.
Maybe someday you'll meet him. I'm just gonna spell it for you because if I say it, that just ruins it. I need you to just read this, and the show will be over.
Oh gosh. Now I'm scared. What is he gonna do?
I don't know. Ryan's been doing this, closing the show this way, for a while now. So I just need you to go ahead and say it into the mic, nice and proud.
The funny thing about this is I have no idea what this means.
Don't worry.
I don't understand this at all.
Just go ahead and...
It says, y'all have heard it because you've heard it from Ryan, I guess, but yah yeet.
He did it. I'm really glad that I have that on camera.
I don't know what that means, but yeah, I guess you should. Like, you should eat? You should eat? Is that what we're saying? Y'all should eat? Y'all eat. That's what I'd say.